This episode of Truth Table is brought to you by our NAACP Image Award nominated book, Truth Table, Black Women's Musings on Life, Love, and Liberation. Get it where all books are sold.
Sisters, how y'all feel? Brothers, y'all all right? If this is your first time at Truth Table, welcome to the table. And if you've been sitting at the table with us all these years, we are so grateful that you have been listening to us through these years, and we are inviting you to partner with us and support our work at patreon.com/truthstable. Now pull up a chair and have a seat at the table with us. Hey y'all, welcome to Truth's Table, Midwives of Culture for Grace and Truth. I'm Kemeny.
And I'm Christina.
This table is built by Black women and for Black women. So welcome to the table, C. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing well. You know? How are you today?
I'm good because I'm excited about the topic on the table.
Yes. Because we contain multitudes. We can talk about different things.
We do. We try to be consistent. Hey, y'all. It's that time of the season for a mailbag episode.
Bum, bum, bum.
Cue the chimes.
And chimes never happen when we say that.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do.
I don't feel like I've ever heard chimes.
Just sometimes they do.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Shout out to our amazing producers.
I know. I love you.
But yeah, it is a mailbag episode. So this is when y'all send us questions questions that you have for us that you'd like for us to answer. And so if you're a Black woman, a part of the Facebook discipleship group, then you got a chance to share some questions that you had with us in that group. And so we will be answering some of those questions. Of course, not all, because there are actually a lot of questions in there, but we're going to do our best to answer them. So shall I go first?
You want to get it going? Just get the party started?
Let's do it.
Bam. What could it be?
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this. She said, I don't know if y'all have already talked about this, but how have y'all been staying sane? That's an assumption. That's a big assumption in 2025. Is anybody
subjective?
2025?
Carry on.
Okay. How have you all been staying sane with the daily deluge?
Deluge
of news.
Great word.
About gestures. And then she goes, I love it. And she puts little in parentheses, gestures at the 10 alarm fire we've been dealing with for the past month. I see you, sis. I hear you. Okay. So question. How have y'all been staying sane with the daily deluge of news for the past month? Well, now 2 months, I guess now, but I'm kicking it to the doctor.
Oh, for me?
I'm going to answer too, but jeez.
Oh, okay. That question implies
it is an assumption
that the concept is overwhelming and that we would not be well. So, what I would tell my students is I would tell them to watch C-SPAN. I was a C-SPAN watcher because
I haven't watched it in a while.
I've not watched C-SPAN
in a
long time.
We don't know. Okay. Gotcha.
I would say that even C-SPAN is facing pressure.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Just to be clear. But what I do like about C-SPAN and still do is that you can hear people in their own words. And I'm always like, no.
What did this person?
Let's hear what you said.
That's right.
Let's hear your whole talking point, your speech, your analysis, whatever. Let's see what's happening with speeches in Congress, you know. So anyway, I have not watched C-SPAN in a long time.
Okay.
I definitely don't turn on my TV and put on like one of the major news stations, or for that matter, I don't watch a ton of local news, but I catch some of it because I live with local news watcher.
Sure.
which I think is important. Somebody in the house knows these know what happened local news.
Yeah.
So the way that I get my news is through my group chats, typically.
That's true.
Typically.
Breaking news. You mean there's somebody in the chat with a nickname, breaking news?
Hello. Weird. She's here. But you're not the only one. You may not even be in the lead. I feel like it's fluctuating. You are coming back with more of a vengeance. Like for at first you were like, I ain't talking about this ever.
Yeah.
And then you're like, that you're adding more. There's more.
It was bad.
But that is how I'm usually getting bits and pieces of breaking news.
Yeah, it comes
that
to
usually is something really wacky that's happening literally in the White House. And some commentary around it. Like that's how I get a lot of it. So, but what I had planned for myself is that I would have a conscious, again, this mindfulness, news watching time once a week.
Wow, once a week is wow.
That's what I had planned for myself. Oh, that yeah. I would literally sit down for an hour of like news updates,
yeah.
national, local, global, et cetera, is what I had hoped to do. But my people in my chat, you know, group chats,
that's true.
You know.
Boogie.
Yeah. And then my husband has this whole thing, a rule that he created for himself that has now been imposed in my life. He's got a 20-minute political conversation max a day.
Wow. And 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Wow.
And then he'll be like, I'm at 20 minutes. I can't, you know, whatever. Even if he's the one, even if he's the one that started the conversation. So, but I think that's an attempt for him to say like, I want some boundaries around conversation and, you know, whatever. But that is what that looks like for me. How about you? Like, what is, cause you know, you're a news watcher.
I am. I've always been,
yeah.
I am the daughter of a Nigerian dad who was very much.
Yeah, my grandmama didn't play about watching news. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've been socialized into this. That's what it is.
You know what happened?
I am a news watcher. Mm-hmm. Not as much anymore, though, because propaganda. Because it's a new day. It's a new day. And stress, and there's just a lot of news. So I've had to be more creative about how I get my news sources. And it feels different, which feels a little uncomfortable, you know, it's a little stretching having to depend on independent journalists, you know, and I'm not trying to cast aspersions against them. I'm just not used to getting my news that way, and thank God for them.
Yeah.
I'm, following independent journalists. I'm following historians.
Yeah.
Lord, please protect all of these truth tellers.
Literally, we pray for these people.
Ooh, yes. Lord, protect them. Seriously, because they are doing the work of the Lord right now. Mm-hmm. So I do that. I don't really have like a rule per se on like how much news I'm going to consume per day. To be honest, I probably should. But I usually, here's the truth of the matter. Probably around this time of the year, I probably would have already taken a social media break. But because things are changing so fast.
What are you talking about?
So rapidly, I just feel like I actually can't, you know, steal away in the ways that I probably would have. Because I'm like, oh, my goodness, I got to really find what's happening.
Yeah.
So I am trying to stay abreast of what's going on, but also trying to not let it overwhelm me. Mm-hmm. So I take breaks. Sometimes if there's some stuff that even comes in our group chat, I'll be like, I'm not going to watch that one. Like, it's just because I know you have to know yourself.
So well, yeah. And there are levels. There's different types of news stories for sure.
Yeah. There's different. Yeah. There's different levels. So if there's images of people being harmed. For instance, there was a video circulating of our beloved and precious, you know, undocumented immigrants, you know, being mistreated, let me just say it that way, and separated. Yeah, I'm not watching that. It was making the rounds and things like that, but I'm not going to watch that. I just can't do it. So you have to know yourself. So for me, I'm trying to be strategic about what I do take in and what I watch. I do want to know the breaking news. I want to know some of the latest wicked deeds that Doja's done. For example, I know that when we hit the weekend, I feel a little bit of anxiety in the weekend because I know that they do their dirtiest deeds on the weekend. You know, that's usually when, you know, they do a whole lot of things under the cover of darkness. And so I'm like, oh God, what have these people done? You know, over this weekend. Like, you know, let me find out. You know, so I try to take it in. But what also helps me to stay sane is making sure I have my times of just like, just watching my silly reality shows.
Aren't you in a reality show right now?
That's true. You know, so I watch my little silly shows, you know, that I just, you know, just I can turn my brain off and not have to think about that. I'll spend time with family who's not too far from me, go see family. That's helpful for me.
Oh, yeah.
Memes and reels, very helpful for me.
I know. So
I spam Christina with 100 reels.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny though.
They're funny. You know, so that's how I stay safe. Prayer is huge. Got to be interceding spiritually. Mm-hmm. That also helps me to not be bitter and resentful toward the 8% and all the others, you know, that voted for this wicked man. You know, so that helps me. That's my commitment, is to pray. Mm-hmm. Pray for those who have set themselves up as your enemy. That is my spiritual discipline to help stay sane. And if I need more, then I do need to get into trauma therapy, actually. That's on my list of things to do. That's if, you know, I don't know if healthcare still holds up. We'll see. I'm sorry.
Day by day.
Where we are.
Day by day. Day by day.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, ditto. I mean, I think, consciously trying to manage the news sources.
Yeah.
And how much comes in, I think, is wise. Although stuff just kind of sneaks up on you. It's like, bam, here I am.
Oh, yeah.
And I also feel some degree of obligation, not necessarily to ever watch anything. Like, because what I take in in that way, I think we have to be really wise about like watching videos of things.
I agree.
I tend to prefer written accounts and
yes.
I don't
reading
have to be
your news.
I don't have to be convinced of
reading
injustice.
Your news.
You know?
Yes.
But I do try to take that kind of information in a reading context. I also feel some degree of burden. I don't mean that in like a resentful way, to have some awareness of what's happening. When you're talking about layoffs for federal employees, when you're talking about what's happening with undocumented people or USAID, these are researchers. So I have a connection to people in those spaces, especially like
got a text right now.
Yeah.
But right in real
Time. Especially like researchers and federal, you know, my parents worked for HUD when I was a kid. You know, I mean, I grew up
in HUD.
Yeah. In the DMV. I don't feel like I can just disappear from information. One, it would be impossible.
I agree.
But two, I also think it helps to inform the way that I need to pray and how I need to be empathetic towards other people.
That's right. I agree.
So, because every one of those news stories about, you know, if we talk about Medicaid or Medicare cuts, if that moves through the Senate, we're talking about the fact that close to 40% of children in the United States are on Medicaid. So I feel like I gotta know about that.
You gotta know about that. Yeah, I do have that sense of obligation too. I can't put my head in the sand, even if you want to. It's really hard to keep your head in the sand in 2025. Yeah. It was really difficult.
You gotta be wise about the way you're receiving it and where you're receiving it from, to your point.
Mm-hmm. And trying to expel the toxicity from your body. So working out is really good for me.
My gosh.
That's very, very important for me. That is also very helpful.
Line dancing.
Yeah, very, very important. You know, so a lot of things that we do. So Christina, you got the next mailbag question.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see what else we got
here. It's a good one. Yeah, and thank you to Morgan for that last one.
I think we're going to do Julie's question. It's the first one up.
Oh, okay, sure.
I think it is. Okay. Hey, Julie. Julia, correction. Let me help me to read, Julia.
Come on, Julia.
Okay. Can you do an episode on managing relationships in religious circles? And then the response from you was, can you explain that further?
Right.
Because I need to give you everything that's happening here. And then the response, she says, I have been wondering how to teach others about skills like boundary setting in the church environment. I mean, because clearly there would never be boundary problems there. Boundaries not being evil, but necessary. And also communication, cross-generational, and also with respect for others' boundaries. And most of all, how to not cross the line between concern, prayer, and gossiping.
That's actually a lot of questions in there.
It is. Why don't you pick one?
Okay, sure. Yeah, you know, it's funny. And I think it depends on where you are within the church, whether you're a lay member or if you're a leader. You know, I think a pastor or in the pastorate, I think it's going to look a lot different. You know, I've been in church leadership, but I've never felt like I've had issues with boundaries with other saints in the church. For me personally, mm-hmm. I've not had that issue. I would imagine it'd be different if I were a pastor. Or on the ministerial staff, mm-hmm. I would imagine, and I assume, let me say, that would be harder. Mm-hmm. I did have, unfortunately, the experience of a stalker coming to my church many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now obviously, that's a boundary violation, you know. And
were they a member of the church?
They were not.
Okay, but they came into the space.
Into the space.
That would have been extra crazy if they were a member.
Terrifying. No, they were not.
That was crazy in of itself. But,
mm-hmm. But yeah, what was, to me, was a problem and an oversight there in the church was just like the lack of protection there. Mm-hmm. Like, wait a minute. So y'all just let the strange person that doesn't even fit within the demographics of this church, all are welcome. I'm not saying that, but this person is clearly sticking out, mm-hmm. you know, and you allow this person to come in and to inquire and to ask about me, you know what I mean? Then not even protect or check and cover. Yeah. That's wild. Anyway, that church was wildly unsafe.
We can have a conversation one day about church security.
Hey, to come on up here, ministry.
I have thoughts about that.
That's important, you know what I mean? You know, but that church was unsafe on so many levels. Anyway, but so there's that. But if I think about the question about the difference between genuine concern and maybe gossip, you know, when praying, I think that's a good question. You know, I think that, I believe that curiosity is a love language. And I think that for you us to do care. Life on life, you know, and really, you know, do life together, we do have to know about the interior lives. We have to be curious, you know, about one another.
You mean people business?
Yeah, we gotta know what it means, you know, what does it mean to walk in these shoes, you know what I mean?
This sounds very reasonable, but I'm just kind of
what does it mean to walk in your shoes? What does it mean to live your life? What does your life look like? You know, what are the burdens? What are the joys? What are the the triumphs, the challenges, you know, all of the things, right? You know, and you know that by walking one another, interlocking with one another, asking questions, being curious, right? Just being in each other's space, vice versa. So I think there's a curiosity there. There's a genuine desire to get to know someone rather than a fact-finding mission and a fault-finding mission. How can I say? Poking, prodding, peering into people's lives apart from relationship. There can be this imbalance of like self-disclosure. And a vulnerability, right? And so it's like, wait a minute, you're very curious about this very, whatever, this part of my life. And yet I don't know much about your own and you haven't shared much about me. I think that's when we start to slide into the land of nosiness and gossip, right? Where somebody just wants to take that information and disseminate that information to whoever, whether it's under the guise of a prayer request or not, or just straight up calling somebody else to tell them about your business. And so I think relationship, you know, is the true intimate relationship with, you know, with people makes that difference a bit different. I'm not just saying the people that are intimately connected to you don't gossip about you. I hope they don't, but I would hope that there'd be a less, the likelihood would be much smaller, I would hope, than somebody that that you're much more arm's length apart with, not quite, you know, as close to. So I think there's a mutual curiosity, a mutual vulnerability where you can really share your lives, you know, together, walk together in agreement, hopefully, versus somebody who's more distant and just wanting to be all up in your business and you can't ask them nothing, you know, or you ask them and they, but they don't really disclose, you know, so. Anyway, how would you answer those great questions?
I think that's a solid response. I mean, I think I would add a place for grace for people's different communication styles.
People,
people who their way of getting to know people feels like 20 questions. And then there are other people who have a way of getting to know people that are just more like presence oriented, like being versus doing a style. So I think people are socialized a little bit differently around that. There are people who are like, I'm getting to know you. And so they're getting to know you is like question, 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 instead of like presence. So, and I just think people have to be mindful, give grace to it, but also be mindful of people trying to figure out what your style might be.
There may be some anxiety too, some social anxiety.
Some
people are just awkward.
Oh my gosh. There's so much that's happening with the deficits and knowing how to connect with other people. Feeling safe enough to show up as yourself. It's just all kinds of stuff I think that's going on with people right now. but I think, you know, I would say this, philosophically, I think people have to figure out what they, what is my relationship to my church? What do we owe each other in terms of disclosure and awareness of my life? So I was, I was thinking about this the other day because I had a person who grew up, what I would say, very church, like in church culture, like connected to family and church leadership. So a church person. And they sent me a text message and they were like, hey, Dr. Christina, I'm going to be away for X amount of time. Just wanted to make you aware. Just blessings to you. Please, you know, pray for me while I'm gone. This is what I'm going to be doing, but I'll be back in service X, Y, Z. Like, there's no policy, no rule whatsoever about that. I can think of another kind of a more mature, older couple in our church that whenever they're gone, like when we're out of town or they're going to be at a wedding, a funeral, you name it, they say that. They're like, yeah. Oh, you're not going to see me next week. And, you know, our church isn't huge. But
I'll be doing that.
You know,
but pastor, I'm going to be gone. I do this.
Exactly.
I am a church girl. It's not a requirement. Yeah, it's just
there are absolutely people who communicate in that way. That it, no one is, that we've never said that you out don't loud. Have to, right? And then, of course, there are other people who, when I tell you, like, I mean, like, they're like, and I've been gone for a while.
Do you still know him?
Exactly. So I'm like, are you sick? Where did you go? You know? So all of that to say is that that speaks more to the fact that the people have different philosophies about what they ought to disclose within the context of the church, you know? And
there's liberty.
There is liberty. I mean, now if you're going to be gone a long time, it is nice to let somebody know. And also, it's also painful to be gone a long time for whatever reason
and not have anybody notice you.
Yeah. So I think about the people who say, like, I'm leaving, so as the kind of people that must believe it is relevant to you that I'm not here.
That's right.
And it should be like, and obviously churches can be, you know, from 100 to 10,000 people, you know, in terms of the size of the church, people do this in different ways, but we want to feel like our presence should matter. And people who are in church leadership have to give an account for who they are shepherding in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, yeah.
This looks different on the tradition, the size of the church, you name it. But it has to be some level of connection to people's lives to be able to have a sense of, do you feel like you're growing in grace? Do you feel like, the gospel is a very real and palpable part of your life? Are there areas that we need to pray for you? Are there benevolence needs that you have? Do you feel like you can present them? Have you been out of work for a while? Like, there is a sense in which your faith community should welcome those questions, and you should feel connected enough
to answer,
ask those questions and to answer those questions. And I think that speaks to a bigger
and team. To have them asked of you without a See, that's the other part too. Yes. So, because we try to have it one way or both ways, and it's like, no, it has to go both. This is a symbiotic relationship.
Take for example, let's say you have somebody who's in a local church ministry, and they, you know, they're a member, and we're talking about people who are in church leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that person has, I don't know, within that year, maybe lost a beloved family member, a parent, or let's say they've gotten divorced. And nobody in the church knows.
Nobody knows. Ooh, painful.
Nobody in the church knows. And that's not a critique at the person who's in pain, but I'm just saying, like,
no.
To me, that just demonstrates that there's some kind of disconnect there because
where you don't feel comfortable.
Somebody, some friendship of someone that goes to that church, some leader, somebody should know, not for the purpose of judging the person, but to minister to the person. Like, how can we not know? Like, you've got a whole husband who's no longer in your life. Like, we don't know that. You have a child who's sick. We don't know that. We have a parent who's passed. We don't
gotta tell people.
And here's the thing, and this is my last point, as somebody who's been in church leadership and whatever, people will still hold the church responsible for the emotional disconnection they feel, whether they shared it with the church or not.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the feeling of like, do people care about me, will still be very real for people, whether they disclosed or not.
Yeah.
Like they'll want the connection and care, even if they don't want to necessarily express the vulnerability of sharing the details. So I just think that I think people have to be fair to each other about that and really try to keep praying and seeking systems so people can share. Gossip is really about intention and whether or not you have the permission to expose information.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that's what gossip...
Permission.
That's when it becomes a place of gossip.
Very important.
What's your intention with the information, and do you have permission to share the information? Mm-hmm. And would you share it in the same way if that person was in front of you as you were communicating out? That's like a heart posture.
Exactly.
But we should know about each other if we go to church together.
Absolutely.
And I just, that's just how I feel about that.
We absolutely should. Well, I think that
was go something.
That was great.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think after the commercial break, I think it would be good to hear from you as someone who is in in a ministerial capacity about boundaries. What does that look like for somebody? Because I think that's important for people to hear that too. Mm-hmm. Because I think sometimes people can. Anyway, let's talk about that. Yeah. let's take a commercial break. And when we come back, we could talk more about boundaries, but also the rest of the mailbag questions. So don't go nowhere, y'all. We'll be right back.
Does anyone really know what hormones do? There's so much talk about women's hormonal health, but most women are left even more confused about what it means for them and what to do about it. The confusion ends now. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Happy Mammoth, the company that produces Hormone Harmony, is famous for its zero compromise policy. No GMOs, artificial fillers or flavors, or any other junk. Only science-backed ingredients in amounts that are clinically proven. What makes this formula unlike anything else on the market is that it tackles multiple hormone imbalances at the same time, creating a cascade of benefits all throughout the body and mind, leading to a better mood, more energy, easier weight management, and deep comfort. Hormone Harmony has over 50,000 raving reviews from women all over the world, with 98% of them saying they'd gladly recommend it to their friends and family. So, for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code TRUTHSTABLE at checkout.
Our NAACP Image Award nominated book, Truth Table, Black Women's Musings on Life, Love, and Liberation, is making waves and shifting culture. I closed this book feeling like I had just partaken in a multi-course meal, filled with grace and the courage to carry on. And I believe you'll finish this book feeling the same way. Morgan Harper Nichols, artist and poet. Buy Truth Table, Black Women's Musings on Life, Love, and Liberation, at our website or wherever books are sold.
As you can see, we're not good for asking for money, but we are asking for money today, and here's why. In order for us to bring the content that we've been bringing to you for years at this point,
8 years,
we've got a whole background of folks who are talented and gifted and loving people who we have to pay to make these things happen, as well as ourselves. And we want to keep bringing great content to you. We are in a desert of truth right now. There seems to be lots of lies happening.
Lots of lies.
And so if you support the idea of promoting truth in any way, shape, or form, we invite you to partner with Truth Table and become one of our Patreon supporters.
Yes. Actually, when you become a supporter, you actually get the episodes a couple days before the rest of the world.
You get truth early.
Yes. You get to speak to, you know, of course, communicate with us. Let us know your thoughts about the episode. And of course, we will be having some more private discussions about things going on in pop culture, in politics,
what are you
all the things.
About? Nothing.
2025 is very normal.
Nothing,
I don't know.
Nothing.
Whatever.
Nothing.
It's figment of my imagination.
Nothing to see here.
We'll be talking about the thing. So anyway, join our community today. And thank you for sitting at the table with us all these years.
Bye, y'all.
All right, y'all. We're back at the table for our mailbag episode. Mm-hmm. And before we went to the break, we were talking about all the things regarding the difference between like gossip and true genuine curiosity, making those types of distinctions.
Sure.
But then also lifting up a little bit of boundaries. And so I was curious because Julia had asked, like, what does it mean to manage these relationships within the church, particularly as somebody on the ministerial staff? What does that look like? What do boundaries look like? Can you just speak to that a bit?
I mean, I can try. I mean,
from your advantage, for yourself, but
you know, I think I recognize that I think of boundaries as informed by obviously like my personality, family of origin or whatever. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm a psychologist too. So I think that I might have tighter boundaries than someone else who just is in leadership and serves the church. Although I think they should have appropriate boundaries too.
For
but
sure.
But it's not like my church work that shapes my view on that first and foremost. It's my work as having been in mental health psychology. Uh-huh. So I bring that with me in a way that's probably different than other people do. Mm-hmm. I mean, a couple of things that I think I'm mindful of is that church leadership, whether it is formal leadership or leadership of influence, is a particular type of power. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be mindful of the way that you use power. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even if you don't think you have any. Mm-hmm. And we all have some measure of it as it relates to someone else. Sure. And so I think we just have to be mindful of that. And so what we ask of people, you know, there are some things that I do not ask of other people.
Mm. Okay, what's an example?
I mean, I could. It's not that it's a sin, but I'm mindful of it. So, for example, I've been in churches where, and this is not uncommon at all, right? That one family in the church might ask another person in the church to provide childcare for them.
Right.
I would be very cautious about that. Mm. Not because I think something's wrong with the person, but it's a type of ask that I would not want to obligate someone into that. Mm. And there are people who are like, I want to help you. I want to serve your family. I want to do this. I am mindful of that because I would not want to be making an ask that someone felt like they couldn't say no to.
That's right.
So just recently, like, you know, we do teaching where we may have panel discussions and things. I'm mindful of who I ask.
Yeah.
Because I have to be able to ask people who I think have the capacity to say no freely.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, the power. You mean power dynamics?
Yes.
Battle?
To say no. And also I have to have by the way, position isn't the only power that happens in church, right? Because somebody can be a member and they could have more social power and influence than someone who's ordained leadership.
For sure.
For sure.
Oh, yes.
Because of money, because of resources, because of racial or gender dynamics.
Longevity,
I mean,
in the church, maybe, or however stat.
Not just title based. Mm-hmm. So you have to do like a power assessment, like asset mapping of like, how does your influence work out? So I tend to be just more mindful of those types of things. Mm. I am boundaried in the sense that I'm thoughtful about who I bring around my children and
for sure, yeah,
and who has access to their lives and their story. I have a particular sensitivity to the way that missionary kids and pastors' kids are treated. Mm-hmm. That I think people are line steppers.
That's right.
I've seen enough. And it's not even just in the context of my family, but having been in the therapy world, at one point I worked with several preachers' kids and missionary kids, and the ways in which they witnessed their parents being mistreated, slandered, the ways that they were pulled into things they overheard. People have to be careful. And I think people can, and again, I'm all about holding leadership accountable. This is the nature of the work I do. But I know for a fact that people put unfair expectations on leaders.
Oh, for sure.
And scrutinize them in a way that they do not scrutinize their own lives, mm-hmm. and their own behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so I just think we have to be fair to people. Mm. I think we have to be fair to them. And I think having boundaries sets people up to not tempt people to be unfair. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So my last little story is, I remember I was talking to, I know a lot of pastors' wives, a lot, from different traditions. But you're talking about like the Black church, Baptist tradition or Pentecostal or AME world. Anyway, I know people who have a whole lot of like rules. They don't say out loud, they don't announce them, but they have their own personal rules that are rooted in a story. That's where we get our policies from. Policies come from people, okay? Policies come from a person. Mm-hmm. And I remember having this is years ago, a pastor's wife tell me, and she decided to tell me this. And I realized that I was privy to the dialogue only because I was married to someone who's clergy.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, she wouldn't, you know, you kind of have to have close enough proximity to the experience. Anyway, and so she was saying how she gets invited to baby showers and activities like that at her church all the time, and she doesn't go to any of them. Mm. And she made
a lot of clergy have that type of rule.
So she made a choice not to attend any, even if she really wants to go, even if it's someone that she has a closer connection to, because she was like, I know that people will count up where I go and where I don't go, and they will hold that against me. They will, it will become, she decided to go here, but she didn't go there. And they have no sense of the capacity that she really actually has, or what her other responsibilities are, or the fact that she has a family outside of people that go to the church. Yeah. Right. And so I remember that Now I don't completely function that way.
Yeah.
I tend to tell people straight up, like, you know, I'm busier than the average person, I think. Yeah. I think. And I try to attend things that I can attend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That I can attend. But I don't have a concrete rule about that. Like I if I can make it, I try to attend. Mm-hmm. If I'm not there, it is because I did not have the capacity time-wise or maybe rest-wise to be able to make that happen. Yeah. And I would rather shape a culture where people, we push each other to give each other grace and not make assumptions. But that being said, I'm at the end of the day, I'm not responsible for all that. I'm sure people have thoughts and feelings about that at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. No, that was good. That was good. Well, thank you for that.
Yep.
Sharing your wisdom on that. I mean, your hard-wrought wisdom.
My word.
I'm sure. So this other question, I'm debating, but I'm going to go with this one. This question. I'm going to leave the name anonymous because she was brave to share some of the details.
Reaffirm.
She says, can you all talk about managing offense/unforgiveness and its impacts?
Mm.
I'm late to the table. She's a new sister at the table.
Hey.
Hey, hey, welcome to the table, sister. but personally, I didn't leave a relationship when God told me to because I wanted to go on mutual peace. Instead of leaving and dusting my feet off, listen, mutual peace is hard to find in 2025. I don't know what it is. Anyway, that's another conversation.
Yeah, well, in general, that's hard.
It's hard to find. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, because I wanted to go in, I think it is. It's a godly goal. I didn't leave a relationship when God told me to because I wanted to go on mutual peace. Instead of leaving and dusting my feet off, resentment grew in me and in them.
Mm.
Now I'm working hard to find forgiveness, mostly for my lack of obedience and not letting it impact my other relationships. Cause we know unforgiveness can bleed out. Also I find in the political climate, you know, that offense is ubiquitous, pretty much it's the currency, you know,
in which
people bond. And so she's like, this culture, you know, of offenses and growing resentments is terrible on my spirit. So anyway, offense, unforgiveness, and its impact.
Mm, what do you think about that?
You know, what I really appreciate about her question here is her transparency. She's like, I love when people are able to own. Now, this was my part. Mm. I did not leave when God told me to leave. And, you know, and because of that, you know, some resentment grew in me and in them.
Yeah.
You know, so as a matter of because of my disobedience.
Yeah. I was supposed to move.
It grew
within
me. And it grew in the other person.
God knew better.
You know? Now, Now I'm working hard to find forgiveness, mostly because of my lack of obedience and not letting it impact my other relationships. So I like I'm grateful for the transparency, the recognition that this can bleed into. It's a little leaven, right? Unforgiveness is a little leaven. You find some offense in one thing, you start finding offense in everything because everybody's flawed. Everybody's imperfect. I mean,
literally, your brain gets wired
to look for it.
To look for
that. Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. To look for that pattern, right? Mm-hmm.
To protect yourself.
I think it's managing offense and unforgiveness more. This is just an ongoing process, I would say. There's still some people, you know, that have harmed me that I still have to continually go to God about and give them over to God. Help me, Lord, to release them.
Yeah.
To cancel the debt. You know what I mean? So I think that's part of it. Is continually doing that. I'm not gonna lie. That's not always there daily. It needs to be in there more in the year 2025 of the year of our Lord.
That's why we pray the Lord's Prayer.
Exactly. Hello.
It's built in that one.
It's in there for a reason. You know, so asking the Lord to release that, you know, from us, because it's like we have to be released from the grip of unforgiveness. I actually see it as a spiritual. I feel like we often think that we're the ones holding on to it, but I actually think unforgiveness is holding on to us. You know, and we need to ask God to release us from the grip of that.
It can definitely feel like change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the jaws of life. It's just, you know, we got to be pried away from it. Mm. I think that in the context of relationship, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. Particularly, I think that if this was like either a deep friendship with a good friend, or if this was a romantic relationship, the people that you love most are the ones that can hurt you the most.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's a
difficult.
It's so hard. It is so hard. But I think that we have to, what I'm learning is learning to trust God's, what and who God blocks. You know?
Yeah.
and not resent. My default is be like, okay, God, just as much as you could block, you can also bring. Mm-hmm. Okay. and why did I have to go through that at all then? You know, if they weren't going to be right.
God is like, simmer down.
Right. Why did I have to go through all of that? You know, but I think we have to give grace to ourselves. I think that's part of it. So this, I'm forgetting, I think I want to tell this to give yourself grace.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Give yourself self-compassion. Yes. Offer it to yourself. And as you're offering it to yourself, don't hoard it. Give it to the other person, the other party. Know that we're flawed. We have all types of different ways that we're socialized. We all got all types. Our brains are wired differently. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know that everybody's all firing on all cylinders. Seriously, give yourself a
liturgical dance for, is everybody okay?
I don't know if everybody's quite okay.
No.
You know,
the bodies are not okay.
But yeah, giving yourself some grace, giving the other people some grace.
Yeah.
But also really being able to entrust ourselves to a good God and really believing that he has every one of our footsteps ordered and that none of our relationships or interactions are wasted. Yes. There was something for us to get. There was something for us to glean. There was something revealed about us in that relationship that we can learn from and that we can hopefully apply to the next person, friend or partner, whoever God's bringing into your life. And that hopefully we move with more grace, more intentionality, more obedience. Hello. Obeying God the first time. Help us. Not easy to do. But I think that's how we kind of manage unforgiveness, is recognizing like, oh yeah, it's still there. So I think that she's on the right track, actually.
Yeah.
Recognizing that she has it, giving it over to God, but giving it over to God continually, asking God to do that. And then reveal to you what you were supposed to learn. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because none of that was wasted.
Yeah.
Even in your disobedience, it wasn't wasted, and God's going to work it out for your good. So that's what I would say about that. As far as our political climate, I already said it before, is that I have a commitment to pray for those who have been beguiled and bewitched into this cult, into the MAGA cult. That's my personal commitment, to keep myself from bitterness, unforgiveness, and resentment. And now, just because I put up a boundary, and just because I say, oh, this person is no longer my friend, does not mean, though, that that's void of love. I know we have a hard time holding those two things together. And we'll probably talk about this more on the show. But my commitment to staying soft and to loving those who have set themselves up in my enemies is to pray for them. Mm-hmm. I got to do that. And pray for myself, too.
Yeah.
Because we all got blind spots. So. Christina, what would you say to this question?
It's a command for a reason.
Hello?
You know, commands are things that we wouldn't do unless it was commanded. And the same thing with our faith and our obedience. Like, the way that we know that we are seeking to be obedient to God is that God gives us something that we don't want to do and we do it.
Hello.
You cannot measure obedience by things that you want to do, because you would want to do them and do them anyway. Like, the only way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we can't really see if we are being obedient. And the scripture tells us to love God is to obey God. So we are demonstrating our love for God by doing the thing that doesn't necessarily feel easy or natural to us, at least initially. Sometimes there are things that we grow over time to be like,
okay,
I love this and it pleases the Lord. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
That's a win. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the, I had to remind myself of that as well. Like, my obedience is shown not by doing the stuff that I like to do typically.
Things I don't like to do.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I agree with you, Ditto, that this the sister's kind of self-analysis
I
and
self-work
is just really mature and thoughtful. And I think that relationships are just hard. All of them, all kinds of them
are
difficult. And they reveal... They lift up mirrors. They reveal us. They reveal us.
And we don't like to see ourselves.
That's the best way for us to see ourselves is in is in comparison. It's in relationship. It's the mirror for which we get to self analyze. And so it's just difficult to do that. I mean, forgiveness is the challenge of the believer.
I'm telling you.
It does not change. I mean, I believe it is our challenge until we see the Lord face to face.
Forgiveness and waiting.
Oh, yeah.
I think
until we see the Lord face to face,
this is hard.
We are going to be challenged by forgiveness. And yet I've always told people that I think we have to get in alignment with at least wanting what God wants.
Sure.
Even if we cannot do it.
He wants. Right.
Even if we, in our strength,
agree
we cannot do it. We have
agree.
To. We
agree
have
with God.
Agree with God. We yep. have to start with agreement with mm-hmm. God, that mm-hmm. the desire has to be there. Like, Lord, I can't do this in my strength, but I want to be free.
That's right.
From seeking this emotional debt, this physical debt, well, you name it, from this whatever particular person. And I don't want to be deluded. I don't want to pretend like bad wasn't bad when they did what they did or whatever, in order to feel like I can release it or look away from it. So that forgiveness part is so important. But I think that's where we see the degree to which we're being sanctified and how we're growing and, mm-hmm. and how we're maturing mm-hmm. is through mm-hmm. obedience to things we don't want to do and through forgiveness, which, and you mentioned the importance of self-compassion, you know, in your response, which I think is spot on. I mean, I find that people who, we know this from like
it doesn't come natural to me. It doesn't come natural to me.
This is from like the world of therapy clinicians. This is like kind of our wheelhouse in mindfulness work. People who are unable to be compassionate to others are unable to be compassionate to themselves. Those things are directly tied to each other. So when we see somebody who has self-oriented perfectionism, mm-hmm. it is much easier for them to also have it's not always one-to-one, but they can often have other oriented perfectionism too. Like they're holding themselves at an impossible standard, right? And so
clock me. But I've gotten better through therapy.
Yeah. 100 I mean, a lot better. Therapy, life, therapy, prayer, myself. Right? Yeah. And that's all of us. And I mean, I just think recognize that our ability to be compassionate with how we think about ourselves, like, oh yeah, I did miss that. Ooh.
Yeah.
Next time. Or or what's going on in my world? When we say what's going on in my world, why did it happen that way? Then we can get practice saying that about somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the offense part, a lot of our offenses are when somebody is tripping, I tend to think, and the record would show that about 95% of the time I feel like it's true they really tripping. Right? I feel like I got some receipts. Like if I call you up and I'm like, hey, I feel like da 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 da, it's very rare we've had a like, hey, and then like within like 2-3 years, 2 months, 2 days, like there's not.
It was revealed.
You know, yeah. With that being said, only God is omniscient, not me or not anybody else, right? And so I think that can create a type of ego. Discerning people can develop an ego around
that's
being
true.
Discerning.
That's true.
And you still have to kind of go and hunker down and say,
I don't know it at all.
No, yeah. I'm going to, what if they meant it this way?
Yeah.
My brain will quickly give me like, what if they meant it? Like they tripping, you know, I can get that that's like my default.
It's exactly.
Like, my default is like, were clowning when they did this. But I have to stretch myself to have an imagination for like, yeah, what if I'm missing the tone? What if I'm misinterpreting the body language? What if something else was happening? What if that wasn't about me at all? What if, you know, the frequency that I hear people tell stories about people and they're like, yeah, she's got this energy. And so, you know, and I'm like, well, is it that the person, is that about me? Am I misinterpreting their body language? You know, do other people feel this? Like, I think we have to do some mental checking because I think we don't have enough energy to be offended all the time.
Well, I think love asks the additional question.
Yes.
It's rooted in curiosity. Well, maybe.
Yeah. We don't have enough emotional resources to just be big mad and to create a world in our mind where everyone is against us.
Against you, yeah.
You know, some people really are. Hello. Yeah. So we got to save our energy and resources for that. Sure. Like we just don't want to be in the enemy making business, you know?
Sure. So I agree.
That's what I would say.
That's great.
To your point, the curiosity is just critical.
Yeah. Just asking that extra mm-hmm. question. I would also say this is also helpful to some degree with unforgiveness and, you know, particularly in the context of romantic relationships. For me, I try to still, even when the Lord, the door has closed with that person, I still, and they've set themselves up, you mm-hmm. know, and they treat it in dishonor or just whatever. I still try to pray for them still.
Yeah.
It's really hard to hate or be angry or resentful towards somebody that you're praying for. It's really hard to do. Maybe it's possible, but I think it's hard to do. And it helps to break that, I think, in some way. So I try to keep a commitment to praying. And there's a time where I'll just feel a release to where I don't have to pray for them any longer. But there's a sense in which there's a period of time. Yeah. It's just a my own mm-hmm. personal, I guess, discipline that I felt like, okay, let me let me just continue to lift up this person. You know what I mean? Because if the relationship was only about, or the friendship, whatever, was only about what that person could do for you, then that's called objectification. That's a very transactional relationship. We ought to be able to be in relationship with people without expecting anything from them. And I'm not to say in relationships, we have obligations to people.
And people ought to treat you right, 100%.
You ought to, but I think that we ourselves can find ourselves objectifying other people if we could easily discard them in the spirit.
Yeah.
When it's done, even if they did you wrong, I'm short of abuse. I'm not trying to make excuses for anything like that, right? Clearly. Violence or anything like that. But I'm just saying, what does it mean for us? We have to move differently as Christians. Yeah, I do believe that we got to move differently as Christians. And so what does it mean to continue to pray for those, right? To love your enemies, to pray for those who persecute you. You know, like to actually do the word and the work of the Lord.
And if in our minds.
Help us, Lord. It's not easy.
If we can make them not enemies, especially if they haven't declared themselves to be. Now, what people might be is like disappointing or trifling. Immature,
raggedy,
self-protecting, raggedy, yes, all the things. But the enemy enemy is kind of like a forward disposition of like it's like a combatant, like coming for you, and it can feel that way in your body if you have not released.
Yeah, you gotta be careful. Yeah,
so I would say
be careful about that.
Even as we assign like the language to the people, we want to be wise about that, because the designation that we give people is going to create a narrative about how our body then responds to them.
Yeah.
So I try to work really hard, you know, like there are people who I know have done me wrong. Like I know.
Oh yeah.
Like I know. They may not know I know, but like I know. Like I know. And we both are connected enough in all kinds of like, or discernment or whatever. It's just like, whatever, but I also know that they are more than that.
Sure.
That's where I get, but I also still have my right to my boundaries as well. You know, I have a right to my boundaries around people who have shown themselves to be unkind or whatever
or
it
dangerous.
Might be.
All
the above.
The range, you know.
The range is there. The range is there. So anyway, I think that question is a really great one for people to keep
chewing on. Yeah, I think it's helpful. And assessing people's capacity for me is really helpful. It's like, oh, this person, they're at war within themselves. So they're going to be at war with me.
Well, people are disappointing.
Yeah.
Disappoint us. Yeah. We disappoint ourselves. I mean, people disappoint us. This is why I think it's so important that we do not inadvertently make idols out of ourselves or other people, because people just cannot bear the weight.
They can't wait. Yeah, of our expectations. You know,
they are going to let us down, and they should be accountable when it was willful and it was wrong and all those things. But we also, I think, can set people up with honorable expectations of what we want of them.
I agree. Yeah.
And then they have an option to be able to get with it or not get with it too. So I think as I listened to that question too, I was thinking about, I was just curious of like, I wonder what those conversations were looking like.
Yeah, I don't know.
In
the
context of that relationship before it ended and why the person wanted to hold on longer after the Lord said, you should step away, right?
Yeah. It could have been a friendship. We don't know the dynamics, but I'm grateful for the question. Yeah. I think it's a really great
But that one. Departure conversation is awkward as a mug. That departure conversation of like, this is not a fit.
The conversation.
Yeah.
You know, because maybe we don't know. Yeah. It might have just been a complete cutoff.
Yeah. Well, she said that she had got this sense of like, I need to walk away, but that she stayed longer. And I'm saying that in the I need to walk away part sounds to me like it's when the conversation of I'm now walking away probably should have happened.
But
I'm saying people avoid that.
And that's why
they avoid them conversations.
And they ghost, they block, they do all types of, anyway, but that was good. Well, you know what? There are actually more questions. So we'll have to do, I guess, another mailbag question. Thank you all for sending those questions.
And send us more.
Yeah, send us more, because I thought that was really good. And God willing, we can do another mailbag episode this season. So thank you. That was fun, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, there were deep questions. But
we got something to say.
But we got a lot to say. So anyway, thank y'all so much for taking a seat at the table with us. Let's keep the conversation going. Send us more mailbag questions. Mm-hmm. Send them to asktruthstable@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes and all wherever your favorite podcast player is. Let me say that. Well, YouTube, you know, all the places where you can see us and hear us.
Yeah.
We have been your hosts, Akemini
and Christina.
We'll see you soon on the next Truth Table. Bye, y'all.